Welcome to the OCRWC podcast. Today I am joined by Garfield Griffiths, Senior Director of Special Events at Spartan Race. With his long history in OCR and experience of creating incredible one-off events, he's been enlisted to be Race Director for the 2023 OCRWC at Mammoth Lakes. We chat about his past in the sport and what to expect for this year's event. Hi Garfield, welcome to the OCRWC podcast.
Hi, how are you doing?
I am fantastic. Thank you for joining me today.
Oh, absolutely. My pleasure.
So for those of you who have been doing OCR, probably know who Garfield is, but give me a quick introduction as to who you are and why on earth I'm talking to you today.
My name is Garfield Griffiths. Most people just call me Garf or Garfield. I have been kicking around this fun sport since about 2012 when I ran my first Spartan race and got a little bit addicted to it, and because I have an event background, music festivals, all of that, I decided to put on my own races. So went through the ringer and kind of worked for a bunch of people, worked for Battle Frog. I've worked for you fine people in 2015 and 2016. I was the race director for the second Ohio race and then almost most of the 2016 Canada race. I've been jumping around, but since 2017, I have been with good old Spartan Race, which is where I reside now. I am the Senior Director of Special Events. So I help, all the fancy races around the world and world championships and stuff, including this one. That's kind of what I'm up to. That's 30,000 feet.
So you get to do the really big, fun events, basically.
They're big and fun, yes. I mean, I have, it's nice. I have Bahamas and Abu Dhabi and obviously this one. There's fun and, I mean, it's tough because there's so many more, and, Adrian knows this and you guys know this, there's so many more nuances to a championship than to, just a standard race, wherever it might be. There's so many extra things, the branding and this and the prize money, and it's all these things and dealing with the athletes. So, yes, it's fun. It's great to go to Abu Dhabi, but it definitely causes me to lose a little bit of what's left of my hair every year.
I think that's a really valid point, isn't it? There are quite a few facets to putting on a successful event, and it's very easy when you take part in one to have ideas, and I love hearing people's ideas. I work in several different areas, most often media, and people always have ideas, and you can give it to me. And sometimes it can be quite frustrating because you go, I know how simple this should be, but it actually isn't. And this is a huge thing.
Millions of moving parts, just a million, yeah. And there's always a kind of a knock-on effect. The slightest change, it's like chaos theory, butterfly flaps its wings. And then my start arch falls down, so it's...
I mean, it really is that simple. There are so many, even just down to having the right generators in the right places with enough gas in them to keep everything going for a weekend.
Absolutely. And then you go to places like Utah, where there's a no burn ban and you can't put a generator on the ground because it's too hot. So you have to get pallets, and then you make sure the generator has to be 3 feet from the tent because the fire department tell you so. And then you multiply that by how many races we got, at least just on the Spartan side, like 60 races a year. So you got 60 jurisdictions with different fire department rules and different permitting. It's fun, but it keeps it interesting. It's why I love the job so much, because it's just constantly evolving, changing, and throwing curveballs. And if I was just doing the same race over and over, I'd be like, no, I'm done, I can't do this.
I do love how Spartan has evolved over the years. You say a rough estimate, 60 events a year. I can't remember who it was I was speaking to. It might have been Giles, and he was saying this, you kind of have the US divided up into quarters, each with its own, and correct me if I'm wrong, each with its own kind of set of obstacles, and they're off in different directions every weekend. And it must be a huge amount to keep track of and to keep moving.
Insane. Yeah, so we have what we call the race kit. Each race kit, you're right, we have East Coast, West Coast, Central, and Mountain. We also have a stadium as well, kit. Each of those kits, except the stadium, consists of eight 53-foot trailers, semis, as I'm going to get all British on you there. Semis. Semis. My accent's gone to crap. It's complete. I'm in 25 years
here. You have entirely lost it, haven't you?
You wouldn't believe I'm a Geordie from the West End of Newcastle.
I thought of you today. I'm sorry to completely interrupt you, but tell me if you remember this line. It was from Harry Enfield, and I said it to a friend. I was like, you're not going to get it. But something annoyed me. I just went, that's put me in a bad mood for the whole D that has.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Julio Jordi.
I thought of you. No one else.
It's in there. It's funny. It slips out. I nearly said slips out, because as soon as you mention it, I get paranoid and my brain starts going, wait, how do you speak? It's the oddest place, being stuck between two nations. And I go back to Newcastle and my friends won't even talk to me anymore. But yeah, so each of those kits, there are eight semis, like 53-foot semi, eight of them, which is basically, I mean, it's everything. It's our festival. It's basically you can build a trifecta with an ultra on it. And so you got eight semis, and some weekends we will have, as the season gets crazy, you know, we'll have four races the same weekend. So that's 40 trailers. No, it's not. Yes, it is. 40 trailers. Do some mathematics there. 40 trailers.
I wouldn't
have
questioned it.
Yeah, 600 trailers crisscrossing the country at any one time. Logistically, it's absolute. It's the guy's like a savant, the guy who handles it. I just couldn't. I'd lose my mind.
Yeah, I'm not sure how. I like organizing things. I love organizing things, but that is a whole new level.
Oh, yeah, because we're dealing with, you know, these independent truck drivers, and it's interesting, to say the least.
And even that, again, like, just anyone who's worked in a business with any kind of logistics, just moving stuff from one place to another is a really big deal. So, yeah, it's impressive. And then I kind of, you know, I think this was a conversation we had between when I did the podcast with Adrian and Joe, and Adrian was like, yeah, we do one event a year, and it takes up our entire year. I can't get my head around doing that many. I think I'd lose my mind.
Yeah, so my like the RDs, because I'm obviously still working with all the RDs and helping with training and all that stuff now. You know, each one does eight races a year. That's kind of the standard contract for our race directors. People are like, oh, that's not bad. I'm like, no, that's heavy duty, because each race is like three to 4 months of planning before you even do the race. You have permits and this and that and help working with the logistics people. I said, so times eight by, you know, 3 months, that's 24 months each, 12 months. So in each year, we're doing 24 months. So these guys, and that's everybody, you know, the construction managers and the team, the guys on the ground, I mean, everyone, they work. There's no doubt the teams work.
So talking about kind of people, quite understandably, not knowing what goes into an event, and this is something that maybe we're not seeing so much now, but I'd say probably about 8 years ago, people were very much like, oh, I'm going to start an OCR. The ticket price is this much. You can make this much money. And you just go, yeah, good luck. Talk to me about you starting your own event. I wasn't aware of this.
Yes. So basically what happened was I am a huge martial artist. Been training basically on and off since I was 11 years old. Mm. And my martial arts school at the time in 2012, like, hey, we're going to go and do this. I think it was Warrior Dash. And I missed it. Now they all came back going, oh my God, it was so much fun. We got muddy and we did this. I was like, ah, man, I missed it. Like, oh, but there's another one called Spartan, which is going to be in March. So we're going to take all the martial arts. We're all going to go, the whole school. So I ran that, and I was just like, oh my God, that was the coolest thing I've ever done. That was fantastic. I loved it. And then, so I got completely hooked on them. And as you say, I mean, back then in 2012 and 13, when it blew up, there was a race every single weekend.
Even in the UK, there was.
Yeah,
it was crazy.
I know you got the rat race, and there was Doug Spence. I know he had a bunch of races. So I worked. In fact, where is it? There we go. I got my nuclear races hat.
Nice.
Yeah. So I actually worked that race. I actually introduced those guys to Adrian, actually, back in the day. So there was races all the time. And I did one, and it was great. And Spartan, it was great. Then I did another one. It was just so bad, like awful, just rickety obstacles. And it was just like, oh. And my exact thought at the time was like, oh, my God, I could pull a better race out of my backside. And I at the time, I had my event, my marketing company, which was basically more digital, but we used to do a lot of grassroots stuff back for the nightclubs pre the internet blowing up. you know, street teams and flyers and planes flying over events and all that fun stuff. So anyway, I had a company. I had experience in marketing. I had experience in putting on music festivals and bars and clubs, so events. Mm. And I was like, I could actually put one of these on. Yeah. So I was like, I'm going to do it. So I did my first race early 2013. I took about, again, as you say, it was about 8 months of planning just to make sure I got it right. we did about 5,000 people, because back then, plus the marketing background, we did about 5,000 people. And everything was great. Obstacles were built because I have some construction background as well. Everything went amazing up until race day. So I did a plan. You guys got Groupon in the UK, right?
Mm-hmm.
Groupon. Yeah. So I thought, you know what? I'll do a Groupon. I'll just basically, as long as I break even, I'm building my database, you know? Yeah. So let me get as many people in. I have their email address after they sign up. So we did like 2,700 Groupons. I was like, brilliant, fantastic. My next race, they'll come directly to me. I didn't think to tell everybody, oh, by the way, when you get your Groupon, you need to go to the website to register for the race. So 2,700 people showed up waving Groupons.
Oh.
It was a freaking nightmare. The line was about 2.5 hours to get into my race. My wife was working registration, and she stayed with me. We're still married, but God, it was close.
You lucky man.
She was like, had to deal with a friggin' shit show of people. And then everyone came in late, and they were all rushing, and they were like, I'm not going to wait in heat time. So the heat suddenly had 600-700 people in them. So the obstacles backed up, and it was like, oh my God, I'm going to just throw myself off a friggin' bridge. A lot of people enjoyed the obstacles. We did some insane obstacles. They were really, really cool. But yeah, it was just brutal. So I was like, that's it. That's the worst idea ever. I'm going back to marketing. Never doing that again. However, I had decided to do a second race, which I was kind of co-promoting at the same time. It was called Mud Mingle. It was singles only mud run.
Oh,
you got
fun.
A different colored wristband. You got a wristband, and if it was like whatever color, like I'm not interested, don't bother me. I'm just here to run.
Yes.
And we had a rainbow one, we had a pink one, and we had a blue one, you know, depending on what your preference was.
Mm.
And I was like, and that was two months after this challenge. It was called the challenge, my race. This was 2 months later. I was like, oh my God, I got to do one more. All right, let me do this one more and just freaking get out of this industry. But because there were so many mistakes made and such a learning curve on that first one, the second one was golden. It was amazing. It just went smooth and registered everything. So I think I made so many mistakes on the first one. It was the best thing that could have ever happened to me in the industry, because I learned everything in one punch in the face event.
But I think that's brilliant. I think that's how we all hate making mistakes. We absolutely all hate it. But it really is the way to become the best at something, is by getting it wrong.
Agree.
Because one, you never want to replicate that feeling, so you're going to try harder on everything. And two, it just highlights when everything goes right, you don't understand how much is going on. And just, you know, like I've said about four times, one small thing, you know, one small thing of not giving people a sentence of make sure you redeem your code caused hours of mayhem, which is something that you will, you know, now you will have learned to check every single box.
Yeah, my wife
and will have made you so much better at everything.
I just literally had this conversation with one of our race directors. We have a brat, she's new and she's learning, and she had a race this weekend, and there was a lot of curveballs came, more than usual, and it was just this, and the Code Irene came in, which is our weather protocol, and closed the race down, and you got to navigate all these people. On top of that, there was a whole bunch of other stuff. And we had a call yesterday with the rest of it. And I said, you know, I said, you did it. You got through it. Customers didn't see it. You know, we use that, the duck theory. I always like the duck theory, how like people see the duck on the surface, all beautiful and smooth. Mm. Yeah, exactly. The legs are going 300 miles an hour underneath. That's us. That's what we do. And I said to her, I said, look, you know, if every race went smooth, you would learn nothing.
Mm.
You could do 10 years of that and you would be no better than you are now.
Mm-hmm.
I said, but what you just did this weekend and pulled all the stops out made you a better race director. And I, fully believe that. Fully, fully believe that.
Amazing. So you did your two events, and were there any more after that?
I'm terrible for squirreling, by the way.
Oh no, so am I. I absolutely am. We could go off for an hour in another direction, but I'm trying to be good.
Good. Then we're good. This is going to be a 19-hour podcast. Let's do this. Ultra. So so I did the second race, the Mud Mingle, and we did like a couple of thousand people. People loved it. It was amazing and fun. So what I decided to do, I thought, you know what, I'm going to do the right thing. And this was, like I said, just after the shit show that was the challenge. So I thought, I'm going to take a chance here. I'm going to bite the bullet. And I offered everyone who did the first race, as I said, I'm going to do another race in the fall, because this for autumn, sorry, being over American. I said, I'm going to do another one, and it's absolutely free to everyone. I literally offered free races to over 5,000 people. And it was a calculated risk, and it paid off. And I also did, it's funny, I did an email, like a Facebook post that was also an email. It's something that I've always fully believed, and I teach my kids this, and that is, you know, just own it. Do not make mistakes. Oh, well, you guys didn't do the Groupon. No, I didn't tell you to do the Groupon. And I always believe that when I'm any kind of leadership role, it's a case of Ben. If people are failing, what are you doing as a leader? Why they're failing?
Yeah.
So, and I tell the guys that, and I'm always fully believe that extreme ownership is, you know, there's a book even about it that I love.
It's incredibly, sorry again to interrupt you, but
it's
incredibly liberating to just own stuff. It took me a long time when I was younger do it. And my first job, I worked for a fashion designer, and I made a mistake. And actually, it was poor leadership, but I also made a mistake. And then eventually I owned up for it. And it was just everything went a bit downhill after that. And I was scared for years. And I was like, no, own stuff. And it's so liberating just to be able to go, this went wrong and it's my fault, which means I can stop it happening again.
Yep.
And I don't know, it's just so freeing to be like, yep, that was shit. Let's make sure that's good next time. It's really good. And it's great as well to say, as a leader, like the people that you are looking at, the reason why you're in that position is because you have responsibility for people, and they deserve to have that leadership. And so that's a really fantastic point to take.
Absolutely. And I fully believe that in leadership, all leadership, you have to show yourself as fallible, I think, because, you know, I'll do it. I'll be on site and somebody's going to come up to me from the timing department. Hey, Garth, you know, this is going on with the timing. I'm like, listen, I have no idea how that works. You're the professional. You do it. If you need any support from me, I'm here. Mm. But yeah, I'll just say, I don't know how to do timing. You know, no idea. But so I did this. Yeah, I did this big email, and it was basically huge lines. That's on me. And I explained why it was on. That's on me. That's on. Anyway, and I got all amazing feedback from it. In fact, there was a guy who did a movie, and you heard it called the Return of the, was it? About the Sufferfests.
Rise of the Sufferfests. Scott, yeah.
Scott's movie. So Scott reached out to me. He said, oh, I'm putting some stuff together. He was doing an article for Outside Magazine. He said, I read your thing. He said the same thing. He said, I can't believe someone would do that. It's amazing. We, you know, he got a rapport going. So anyway, did the second race, gave everyone, and I mean, only about maybe 3,000 or 4,000 took it, which is fine. And it was incredible. Still people talk about it. It was at Miami Speedway, and it was just off the chart. And I was a mud run guy, because OCR didn't exist at the time. So that was it. I did a few races, and then started freelancing for a few companies. There was one of those zombie run things that was out, and we want to do a zombie run, but we want obstacles as well. So they hired my company. We all came in as, like, you know, the cavalry, built obstacles. So I did that for a few years, and then in 2014 Battle Frog, of all places, was opening up, which was an interesting one. And they hired me to basically manage everything and research all the obstacle courses at all the, the O courses at the military, at various army bases. And that was that. We did that. And the rest of that. And then after that, and that's when a young Adrian reached out to me and said, I heard you're doing mandatory obstacle completion at Battle Frog. I said, yep, I'm thinking of doing it. I said, I don't want to do burpees. And I said, if you want to take my prize money, do my obstacles. And he said, well, I'm putting this race together called OCR. Like, oh, okay, that's cool. And that's how we ended up meeting before Battle Frog opened, before even 2014 when I picked this up. We kind of had a meeting of the minds over the whole mandatory obstacle thing and talked about bands and how we're going to do it. And yeah, and that was it. So after Battle Frog, you know, I did some work with Savage Race, but then, you know, Adrian said, look, you want to come on board and race direct for us? So
So it sounds like you have a pretty great heritage of OCR experience, basically.
A little bit. I've been kicking around a bit.
And for those who are maybe, I mean, look, I can't deny it. There's been some less than pleasant chatter about this. I never know what to call it, partnership between OCRWC and Spartan. Oh, yeah. And, you know, all of us who are involved are just like, I mean, I don't want to say it, but just lighten up. It's just, it's a way to keep the sport going and have an awful lot of fun as far as I can see it. Mm-hmm. But it's good maybe for people to hear you have experience of working with OCRWC. You've done this before. This isn't brand new to you. You understand the brand and how it works.
Yeah, no. And, you know, I get it. I'm not, you know, I don't run around with blinkers on, like not having a clue what people are saying. I see it. People come up to me about it. I think the big thing is, yeah. And, you know, everyone looks at Joe, Spartan's trying to buy everything and everything. No, Spartan is just, you know, we took over like Tough Mudder, for example. Mm. And, you know, this one, as you say, it's a partnership. We're just collaborating. We're just supporting. That's it. We just want this race to be to keep going. It's a huge race. It's an amazing race. I love this freaking event. I've told, you know, people were asking me before this partnership, hey, you know, what about us? I was like, oh my God, it's like the coolest brand. I said, the athletes love it. I said, it's kind of the cool boutique brand, you know, yeah, we're the Walmart if you want to, but, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, we're just, you know, we're very structured and corporate, and we have to be because we're in 35 countries, you know, otherwise the machine wouldn't work. But no, Joe wants to support. And a lot of people say, oh, Spartan's going to do this and do that. No, we're not. Absolutely not. Because we're not doing burpees. You're not going to see spear throw. We are going to do a guest obstacle because that's part of what OCRWC is about.
And I think it would be fantastic to bring even more guest obstacle back, you know, from other brands, if possible. I mean, I know the logistics.
We are. I'm working on it. I'm talking with Sid right now.
That's what we used to do.
Tough Mudder. I'm trying to get Tough Mudder to bring one as well. Yep. So that's what we're doing. And I think the example I use is we're partnering with Adrian. Okay. We're collaborating. And why would we come in and try and change everything? Adrian will say, hell no, this is my brand. No, don't do that. But look at Tough Mudder. We took over Tough Mudder, what, a year and a half ago. They don't have burpees. They don't have spear throws. They don't have buckets. It's the exact same product or whatever they're doing. They're changing things. But that's it. We're not messing with what anyone's doing.
I mean, when it comes to business, it would be incredibly foolish to take successful brands and just turn them into a cookie cutter. Because the reason why these brands are successful is because there's a market for them. I mean, last episode I had Will Hicks on from the OCR report, and he's a Tough Mudderer.
Yeah.
And I was a Spartaner. And it never really occurred to me that the two don't really overlap. Because in the UK, we had not so many options that they kind of do overlap a bit. And yeah, they're two totally different brands with their own brand ethos. And why would you combine that to make something new? Because you would lose 50%. Like there's space for different ideas within the same sphere and for the sport to grow, which is, I think, what we all want. I mean, I know there's a lot of talk about standardization and the Olympics and things like that. And I'll repeat heard somebody say, I've said it a few times, but a comment someone made was, just because this is one option for OCR doesn't mean that's the way it's all going to go. And it's true. Right. Like I think there's space in the environment for lots of different just feelings, not even just brands, just the feeling between Spartan and Tough Mudder.
It's just good business. It's good business. You have to have competition. Keeps everyone on their toes. Stops people getting complacent. You know, it's like, I guess I could use an analogy. If like McDonald's took over all the Burger Kings, what would be the point of suddenly making Burger King sell Big Macs and everything? What? Just open more McDonald's.
Yeah. I actually read something once, and I hope I'm telling this correctly, but very often when you get vending machines, you'll get two different brands next to each other in direct competition. And it actually makes both of them more successful to have the other one next to it. And I'm really going to try and find out the logistics behind that. But if there's just one option, it's less successful than if there are two.
That is interesting, but it makes sense. To answer that, I can, you know, I guess the horse's mouth, the race director, I will be working with Adrian, but I will be the race director for OCRWC 2023 at Mammoth. Mm-hmm. And it will be a unique event with all of the cool obstacles, all of the this and the monkeys and gibbons and all the fun stuff. And even Platinum Rig, even though it's a complete pain in the ass to build, and it always has been, but it's...
But we love it.
Yes, we love it. It's a staple. So, yeah. So, I mean, I think it can only be better because we're coming in, you know, we're going to utilize a lot of our staff. So I know Sid and the guys have been great doing it, working till 4 a.m. every morning. So they're going to be like, oh my God, we finished at 5:30. Yes.
I don't think you're ever going to get Sid off course before it goes dark. He can't stop working.
Oh, well, so we'll have to figure that one out. But yes, it's going to come in. But yeah, no, we're just going to offer the full support of what we have. And one of those race kits that we talked about, the 8 trailers, we're going to probably bring a few of those over because obviously there's obstacles. But, you know, there's a whole bunch of truss on there so we can actually upgrade some of the obstacles. It'll be the same obstacle, but we're going to actually upgrade a number of them to full truss, which is going to just be very, very cool.
And what about talk of new obstacles? Has that been a conversation yet? You know, there's usually a bit of innovation every year and something new gets debuted. Anything in the pipeline? I mean, obviously you can't tell me what, but has there been?
No. There's definitely been some discussions. And basically on the map, because we had to supply the map to Mammoth, and we're still in the process of them. It's got to go through multiple channels. As I mentioned, the jurisdiction thing, California is the king of red tape. They love it. In fact, they have red tape for their red tape. It kind of keeps it nice and tidy. But they're going through the Forestry Commission. So we had to get, I had to give them a list of obstacles. So Adrian and I, we all worked. This is what we're going to give them. But yes, there will be some that, some of them were like obstacle one, obstacle two. So we have at least 4 spots that we can get very creative.
Amazing.
We haven't started that process yet, but we absolutely will.
There are plans for it. And what do you think about Mammoth? Because obviously this is a totally new location for, I mean, a couple of athletes may have competed there before at different events, but this is a new location. For a lot of people, it's unknown. A lot of people are quite scared of going there. I know, you know, in the UK, there's a lot of chatter that it's just too far to travel. I personally think once I'm on a plane, I'm on a plane, and I can't wait to explore somewhere new, but maybe I'm a bit naive. But what do you think of the location? Like, tell me about it, because I don't know anything, and I'm so excited.
So we haven't actually been there yet, because the West Coast of the US has been under the most insane weather and winter for possibly ever. So the mountain that we were going to go look at is still under about 20 to 30 feet of snow.
And we're having the event there in October.
So it will, there will probably be, there will be snow on this course.
Right.
Kind of cool, at the top of the mountain. And of course, we're going to take you to the top of the mountain, because why would we have a nice mountain if we didn't make you run up it with a sandbag or a small child? not happening. Disclaimer. The bloody Spartan throwing in small children again.
Bring your own child. Get a discount.
Bring your own child. BYOSC. So it's, the venue itself is off the chart. It's just ridiculously gorgeous. If you look, anyone wants to go, you know, just Google, okay, or go to YouTube, you know, Mammoth Lakes drone footage, and there's some sick stuff. So I get the distance thing, but it's definitely, you know, Adrian's moved around the UK and Canada and the Northeast. So, you know, going to the UK, everyone in the US and the West Coast, in the UK. You go to Canada and everyone in Mexico is like, I'm not going to please everybody. We would love everyone from the UK to come. I mean, this is going to be probably, I would say, and I work Blue Mountain, which was amazing, but this is going to be the most, I say, visually incredible event that I think Adrian and the team have worked. I mean, it's if you ever see the film of like Yosemite and all these ridiculous places, that's what this looks like, and it's going to be spectacular. So yes, it's a bit of a hike, as we say in the tune, but it's going to be worth it. I mean, there's a whole village there, very similar to the Blue Mountain, very sort of Olympic villagey vibe, and hotels galore.
Yeah.
So I think it's definitely worth the journey. It's going to be incredible.
It's really good having that kind of setup. You know, we had a similar thing in Vermont. The UK was different, being at Nuclear, which is a permanent course. Nuclear put on a fantastic kind of event village, but you lose a bit of the atmosphere with people having to go back to the hotels and not wanting to come back. So I'm really excited about, you know, another opportunity to have everyone on site. And I mean, the kind of things that you have in the States. I had a couple of friends from the US visiting me a few weeks ago, and I took them up Snowdon, and I was like, I mean, this is impressive for me, but you guys live in Colorado and California, so I'm really sorry, but this is the best I could do.
That's a nice hill.
Yes, this is a small mound for you. But yeah, the kind of stuff you have out there is absolutely incredible. It's
and especially
not going to be a hard job to make it look beautiful, that's for sure.
No, absolutely not. I mean, I'm in Florida, so Florida's nice, but it's flat as a pancake, and you know, just that's it, flat and hot.
Flat and hot, and a few too many crocodiles.
The West Coast has got all the crazy natural beauty.
Yeah, I can't wait for that. So, how has aside from the red tape and the bureaucracy that didn't come out very well, how has
just saying that all the bullshit, but tomato, tomato.
How has the initial course planning been going? I was
actually
quite surprised
really,
that it was starting
really
so soon, but yeah.
So considering we haven't been there, which we're planning on, that's going to happen soon. So one of the beauties of this mountain is they have plotted for their because they got mountain bike trails, they've got hiking trails, they've got the ski runs. So they have so much GPS data.
Oh, wonderful.
That they shared with me, it's just, and I was just like, okay. So it's been an odd process. Generally, we'll go. I mean, me and Adrian, we went to Canada, and we just walked around the mountain and did all our stuff. Good stop there. Build here. That's the festival there. This has been done remotely right now. But with the amount of data, I mean, they just said, yeah, here's the files. And it looked like someone just threw spaghetti all over it. So we had to kind of decipher everything. But then we've been back and forth with the mountain. We've had about 10 different calls. Okay, this is that. You can't do this. How about you move over here? And it's been an interesting way to do it. But I think it's going to be fantastic. And again, we will get up there. We just got to wait for about a month or so for that, the majority of the snow to melt. But we can definitely check the bottom of the mountain where the festival is going to be, and the lodge, and there's all the buildings that we can do stuff inside, which is going to be great. So yeah, this... very excited for this course.
So, I mean, we can probably deduce from what you've already said, but give me some top tips for what athletes should expect and prepare for, seeing as we've still got a couple of months to get there.
So it's going to be cold at the top. There is a chance that you get high up that there will be snow. So be prepared for snow on the top of the mountain. So I don't know if you want, I was going to say icebergs. Icebergs even a thing anymore, but you know.
You've got a little logo on your t-shirt. I was thinking icebergs. Although no spikes, so, yeah. Don't forget the rule book, no spikes.
No spikes, yeah, don't destroy our wood, please. I would say the biggest one is elevation. Absolutely would suggest you get there, unless you live at an elevation. I would give yourself a couple of days to get acclimatized. I think the bottom of the mountain is at 9,000 feet. And I think the top of where you go up, I think you go up to almost 14,000 feet. And speaking as from Florida, we're about 6 inches above sea level. I put on the Utah race 2 years ago for Spartan. And that top of that mountain was like 14,000. And I went up to the top on the very first day, and I thought, oh, well, beautiful. This is the place for some social media. I'll do some videos for the social media team. And I've watched it back since, and I'm like, here we are, on the top of the mountain, it's beautiful. So if people are going to run in that, and I know the Atkins and them will go in, they always go in a few days early, but I would suggest everybody, give yourself a couple of days. Plus, if you're going that far out to the West Coast, go early, enjoy it, you know?
Yeah, OCR tourism.
But yeah, no, that's the big one. It's... it's elevation, and just be prepared for a little bit of cold. It's going to be October at 10,000 feet.
What about water?
As in, are we going to put them in water or drinking it?
Putting people through it, is that a possibility?
So with Adrian, when we did 2015 in Ohio, and people still give me crap for this, we dunked them in a few times, and there was this crazy anomaly in the weather that came in I think throughout the build, it was, you know, I don't know, I can't do the math, so I'm going to embarrass myself. So 60 degrees. I don't know what that is in English. Yeah, but it's pleasant, you know, call it like autumn in London. There you go. And then over race weekend, it dropped to like 27, which is somewhere near zero. But I'd already designed the course to go into the river, down the river, and out of the other side. And then we had this Weaver, which was a huge pit
full of water. I remember.
Yeah, and you went over it and under it and over it and under. So on Friday night, I'm like, guys, we got to do something. And we ran around like lunatics building fire pits after the water. So basically where they come out of the water, fire pit. Where they come out of the Weaver, water. And we're doing it at the top of the mountain as well, at the top of the hill. So yes, we have a lake there, which is nice and clean. They use it for swimming and all that fun stuff through the summer. I'm tempted. I want to do something in it, definitely. Mm. It's going to be cold because it's way up there. Mm. But, you know, it's the World Championships. So, you know, we're not going to mollycoddle.
Well, I remember for the 2015 event, there was a huge UK contingent went out. 2014, not so much. It was more like the pros. And then 2015, a lot of people went. And I remember a lot of pictures of people huddled around fire pits wearing their dry robes. And now, as a timely announcement, OCRWC has partnered with Dry Robe this year and is releasing a limited edition OCRWC dry robe. So it's not for sale yet. It'll be for sale, I don't know, a couple of months, but you can pre-order. Absolutely, I'm saying now, if you don't have a dry robe, get one and pick it up at the event, because it sounds like you're definitely going to need it.
Absolutely. Dry robe has, even in my job as a race director, has saved my backside many times. I have a nuclear one that they gave me with the short sleeves, but I have just a general non-branded one that Gideon, the CEO, gave me. And I wear that like religiously in the cold, and it's I love those things, they're fantastic. So yes, dry robe would be a great call out
mine
there.
Will be coming with me, and I discovered when I went out to World's Toughest Mudder last year that you can wear it like a coat on the plane, so you don't even need to take up a hand luggage, just wear it like a coat. What are they gonna say?
So when I go random, just for people who are thinking, how the hell do I pack a dry robe, I was given by James Parrish at Nuclear. When he gave me the dry rope, he said, use this as well. And it's this suction bag.
Mm.
And you put it in, and then you suck the air out. And I'm sure people have seen it for luggage. And it turns the dry rope into a pancake that goes in your luggage. It's amazing.
Does that do it automatically, or do you need to use a vacuum?
So there's two. There's one, you just roll it really tightly, and the air pushes out. And then you seal it, and it doesn't get back in. And there's one where you literally put a vacuum attachment, and it just... it'll suck the air right out. Yeah, and those things are absolutely amazing.
We need to get them sold alongside dry robes then at the
event. Right. I guarantee Gideon, a dry robe, knows what I'm talking about. So there you go.
I'm sure he does.
Reach out to him.
Yeah.
So yes, to answer your question from 16 weeks ago, yes, I am going to put them in the water.
Okay, so maybe think about wearing a shorty. I would.
Yeah, absolutely. And then maybe we'll build some fireplaces just to have a little 2015 flashback.
The thing is, right, when an event is like that, people complain at the time and they don't like it, and they say, this was awful, this was horrible, this was wrong. And then some time passes and they're like, that was freaking epic. And they're the ones that people remember fondly. They're the ones that people have the best pictures from. And they're the ones that you have the stories from. So, yeah, I mean, but this is what OCR is all about, isn't it? It's hell and it's really difficult. But the harder it is, the more it gives back to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. If it was easy, it'd be pointless.
Mm.
I mean, you know, it's just, you know, I mean, we have most people, if you look at the transition, obviously, you know, Spartan, we have you guys as well, the 5Ks and the 10Ks, and we go to 21 and then 50 kilometers. I see the transition. I've seen it since, you know, all my time in the industry. People transition. There's very few people from 2012 who are still doing 5Ks. You know, the sprint, or the 3Ks. But if they are, they're doing both.
Mm.
People transition to harder. They want it to be harder. So you're right.
Mm. I love the event could have stayed at Stratton, and I'm sure people would have been happy with that. But to change the event up Actually, I don't think people would have been happy with that, but still. But to change the event up changes the event. You know, you can have the same obstacles. I can't remember which year it was. Maybe it was 2019 or something. Spartan, when Nicole Miracle won because she packed the right clothes, basically.
Tahoe?
Yeah, maybe. I'm forgetting now because...
Must have been Tahoe, yeah.
Yeah, and it was basically, I mean, not to take anything away from her skills as an athlete, but it was the weather that was one of the greatest obstacles. And she was so beautifully prepared that that was what gave her the edge on the others and allowed her to get to the end, basically, without dying. So changing the location so drastically to something like this, where, like you say, it's a really, really good chance there's going to be snow, there's a good chance you're going to use water, it's going to test something different about athletes. The athletes who do these events aren't running just track. They don't want to just do the same thing all the time. There's that mental itch that needs to be scratched, whether it is the, you know, elite podium winners or whether it's the journeyman, like... people like being tested. So yeah, it's going to be difficult. It's going to be cold. It is a long journey, but it's a bit of an evolution, I think, anyway, for the brand and for the sport and working with you guys. I mean, it's so exciting what we're going to be able to achieve together.
When they first mentioned it to me just before Christmas, I was just like, yes, do it. It's so exciting. But I love the brand. It's one of my favorite brands outside of Spartan Bosses. No. There's something about it. There's just, I don't know. I used the term boutique when I explained it to Mike, but and I think that's kind of the it's just that sort of niche, and that's why it's so popular, you know?
Mm. Yeah.
Especially with the athletes, which is crucial.
Yeah. I think I've always loved Spartan, and anyone who's listened to this podcast, I always talk fondly of Spartan. It was the first brand I ever did. I've been very, you know, I've criticized sometimes in the way that people who take part do, but I've never had any strong criticisms in the same way that I would have criticisms for our event, because that's what you do. But I love Spartan. I love OCRWC. I think what Adrian does is fantastic. And the team he has is, you know, so good. So good. He's collected such a good team. So for me, it's so exciting to have, you know, it's not like, oh, we're partnering with this brand that we've never heard of and I don't know anything about and I'm a bit wary of. It's like, no, this is Spartan. You know, when I did the podcast with Joe, without being like a geek, I did my first Spartan race in 2013. Like, I loved it for years. And I was like, did I think that one day I'd be doing a podcast with Joe DeSena? And now now the brands are working. Like, it's so exciting. And I hope people can get on board with the excitement. Like, this is big. It's amazing.
No, it's a great thing, and it's just, you know, the nature of like social media. I even joke. I mean, you know, we're always going to get crap. You're on the top of the pedestal. It is what it is. It's just the nature of the beast that we're going to get crap. I was joking. Like, I was talking to somebody. I said Spartan could come out and be like, okay, we figured it out. We have cured cancer. And then social media will be like, nah, it's the wrong color. So it really doesn't matter what we do, but you know, the people that come to the races, because half them, you know, the keyboard warrior guys are probably not even going to Spartan races. Mm-hmm. But you know, the people are still coming. Our numbers are great coming out of COVID. Obviously we all took a hit, but you know, it's good. Numbers are growing more. I mean, we're doing 13,000 out in Utah, so somebody likes what we're doing.
Yeah.
And you know, we're really excited to be working with Adrian. I'm so excited to be working with Adrian again. So I can't wait for this race to happen. I think it's going to be incredible. Next level.
I think so too. He's a good egg. It's a good brand. And yeah, I'm super excited to see what you guys are going to bring to the table. It's good. And it's good to hear that everything's growing after COVID. I think it's been a slower regrowth than I think people expected. You know, we're all so desperate for things to start again, and then it kind of got to a point where people got used to not being able to have fun almost.
There's a lot never came back. Customer confidence is the big thing, you know. People so many races, especially for us, because we have so many races, you know, we ended up, as the COVID thing picked up, we start canceling this, and you know, to the point that we actually shut down, as like everyone did, shut down completely. But, you know, all those cancellations, people have to get refunds and this and transfer. And it just shakes confidence. And now, you know, I think we've noticed in all industries, all the different OCRs, is everyone's signing up later.
Mm.
Everyone's holding off just to make sure that race is happening and this race is happening. So I think it's just a bit of re-education or just some time as it'll get to back to, you know, pre-2019 levels. But no, numbers are great. You know, I've seen the numbers for OCRWC and they're flying. It's going to be a great race already.
It's always a great event. Yeah, I hope it continues to grow for every brand. I mean, as Adrian's always said, and I'm alongside him with this, without every other brand, we don't exist. So we have no interest in other brands failing because, I mean, that does us no favours whatsoever. In fact, it's a conversation that happens often about qualification. Things aren't back to pre-COVID levels, to be fair, for people to be able to open that conversation up again. And we would love to, but we have to be fair to everyone to have an equal opportunity to take part in the event. But yeah, hopefully it can start to... It can start to grow because OCR was going in such a great direction. And for those of us who do it, we love it. Like there is a genuine love for it. And we just need to open it out to more people and get them coming. And when people do, they freaking love it as well. Like there's something about it.
Oh, yeah, that's the thing. You've got to get them. I always feel that we should, do the drug dealer theory. Just give them the first one for free and get them. Didn't go down well in the finance meeting when I said, let's just give everyone free races. They're like, no, Garfield, get out. You're not supposed to be here.
Maybe. I'm always doing that to him. I'm like, maybe we should do this. And he's like, do you know how much money that would cost? I'm like, yeah, but it would be cool.
Yeah,
that'd be great. Maybe we should just hand you a small amount of entries to like throw out to randomers.
We did. It's a funny thing you should say that because I think this might be them. This box here is actually free race and all the race directors have a whole pocket full for customer service issues on race day. So yeah, we can do that. I can just drop them out of a hot air balloon or something.
Go over a city.
Yeah, just send it.
A golden envelope posted to someone random.
A golden envelope. We should do that.
We should do that.
Writing that down. Steal that idea.
Pick like 10 people from the database and send them a golden envelope through the post.
And they get to go to Joe's farm.
Can I come?
Yeah, I got a Joe. He moved. He's in Orlando now, of all places.
Orlando?
From in beautiful, scenic Vermont to Orlando.
Is that where the Tough Mudder permanent course is going to be then?
So what about that local sports team? I can't say anything. So we have a new office, new offices down there, and it's very big. We have the Spartan Combat, which not a lot of people really hear about, which is one of our brands. And I know Joe and his kids are very into it. There's a huge kind of wrestling thing in that area. I think that was part of why I was told.
Mm.
So yeah, I mean, he's still got the farm in Vermont, but spends a lot of time in Orlando. Yeah.
Fair enough. Such a big country. Yeah. It changes so quickly.
It's enormous. I didn't even realize until someone told me that the UK fits in Florida. I was like, oh my God.
Mm.
To me, Florida is just like one tiny part of America. It's huge. I mean, it's like three time zones. It's crazy.
Yeah. Oh, it is crazy. I struggle so much with time zones and the states. In fact, this is something I was going to say about then how Spartan works in the US, and this may not be interesting for people, but I wanted to ask a question. Like that's one whole company, Spartan, in the US, but in the UK and Europe, it's separate, isn't it? Like it's not handled as one overall thing. It's handled by each country individually.
So yeah, so we do have licensees or franchises all around the world, but we Spartan US or Spartan International, which is based out of the US. We do still oversee the UK, Canada, and I think Western Europe just came back under our umbrella. Outside of that, I believe Australia's on its own. Yeah, I think the rest are kind of they just work through our international department. I mean, obviously we quality control and all that fun stuff like any franchise. But Giles and the team, they're all part of kind of our overarching Tough Mudder Spartan combo Frankenstein's monster thing.
It's just, like you say, it's so crazy. The UK can fit into Florida and yet, you handle everything there under one thing. But
oh, it's fun. It's fun. You know, you have to, especially because working on these international events, dealing with people on the West Coast and then Abu Dhabi and then one of the main guys is in Singapore and then obviously the UK dealing with Rachel Ann. I mean, it's trying to coordinate a meeting with everyone, it's insane.
Mm.
The schedules, because Hang on, what time is it there? It's like 4 a.m. Oh, shit, sorry.
I mean, the way I work around time zones is normally, and you're lucky you didn't get a message from me today, but I did check several times. Normally it's just like, are we talking in half an hour? I'm like, yes. I'm like, good, it means nothing to me.
No, that's not a problem. Don't worry, I switch it. I don't switch it all off. I can't. My phone is on, but my email, yeah, you can send emails all day long if you like.
Oh, amazing. Well, you've got me even more excited for the event, and we've still got months to go.
Same here now. I'm all fired up.
Oh, tell me more then.
No, I'm saying you've got me. You got just, I mean, like any of us, I could literally sit and talk about OCR till the cows come home. I just, you know, I love the industry. I love everything about it. I miss the old days. I do miss some of the old days. I've said this, and I unashamedly will say, I miss this switch from when they were called mud runs.
Mm.
Yes, that's right, rabbit ears, to OCR. And maybe I'm opening up a can of worms. I feel we lost a little something on that transition when people started taking it too seriously.
Mm.
That's one of my thoughts. Now, I get we're talking about world championships, so obviously they do, you know, Atkins and that. They're not going to go run the bubble run. But, yeah, I just missed that 2013, 12, 13, just everyone running around in kilts and tutus. The UK is still, when I did nuclear race, what was it, 16 and 17, I think it was, it reminded me of the old days here. It was all people dressed as clowns and makeup and all this. And, you know, and here now everyone's like, oh, I compression shorts and the right shoes and all that. It's like, I'm just wallowing around in the mud pits. I don't even run these days. I just sort of sit there and play in the mud.
I mean, the only reason I have to run, and I say run with quotation marks, because right. I'm really poor at it, is just to not get freezing cold. I think we do still have fun here. There was a time where we would do more fun laps. So people might go off and do their competitive or their serious lap, and then people would go around together just having fun. The community changed a lot, though, in terms of just the people. So a lot of the ones who were, and I can only talk about the UK, obviously, because that's all I know in terms of taking part. The ones who were involved in it in those days, there's only a tiny percentage of us still left. And we all know each other. And me and somebody else kept saying we ought to, at Nuclear, arrange like an OGs wave.
Yep.
And I think I was speaking to someone at Nuclear. I was like, can we have a whole wave just for us? But there's only about 30 of us. And, you know, then we'll camp and make it like the old days. But that would be fun.
No, I do. And I remember a lot of the, your guys, because I was, like I say, I was doing the working with Nuclear on some stuff. But yeah, there was like all the Mudstickle guys. I remember those. They were all at 2014. They were all here.
Mm.
I can't remember his name. A really tall guy that used to run Mudstickle. Pete. Yeah, and then there's the other guy whose name now eludes me.
Phil?
Yes. So all those guys were cool. So, but I did, the Nuclear race is still going there, right? I saw.
Yeah. They just had it this weekend. They had a really good.
I saw a really good weekend. I saw some new obstacle. It looked like a conveyor belt.
Oh yeah, so that's something that the Travelator.
Yes.
So we've a few races in the UK have had that. There that used to be one difficult. Called Rough Runner, which was an inflatable obstacle course race. And that was really good fun. And that was one that a lot of people would kind of do as a first timer because it seemed very fun. And they had the Travelator at the end. And yeah, now Nuclear has got it. And it's the only ones I've ever done, they have different speeds. So you can kind of have a slow one or a fast one. But that's tricky.
Especially when you're like done. I did break my nose on that slide though.
Did you?
Oh yeah. So I was being a clever shit, as they say.
Did you go down face first?
On the Friday I was there before the race, and I was with the guy Tony Jarvis, the photographer.
Great guy.
Really cool guy. He was doing a load of photos, and he said go down. So I went down, did it. We did the whole slow mo thing and all fun stuff. And he said, oh yeah, some people go down face first. If you go face first, you got to do this and cross and all that. So I did that and I flew off and I was in midair and I was Superman and I ripped up all that. And I was like, that's amazing. I'm going to do it again. And got told completely cocky and just boom, right as it at the corner. And I just split my completely for the rest of the weekend. So I was at the finish line. I was the finish line announcer for a couple of years and I was just looked like I'd been in a fight.
Oh my gosh.
I love that slide. That slide is the best.
I've never done it.
The death slide?
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing.
I know, I got too scared.
It.
So one year I did
Why?
The UK champs there and I DNF'd before the slide because it was just so cold, I got hypo. And then other times I've just been too scared. I've actually been too scared to go down it.
Did you do the zip line across the lake?
Zip line, absolutely fine. Not that's not a problem. I don't know.
It's a little scary. I can see that.
I've done other slides. I've done some great slides, and you know, even slides where people, you know, they've been dug out of pits and people have broken their ankles, and you know that they're not safe. But for some reason, the death slide always scared me. I must go and do it, mustn't I? That must be my challenge.
There we go.
For
yeah,
you.
Absolutely. Get it done.
Well, normally I ask people for a picture and I say either you send me a picture or I'll just find one to use. But I think you're going to have to send me a picture of you on the death slide for this.
Okay, so it won't be like that famous picture of Mr. Mouse with his kilt up around his...
I love Mr. Mouse. He's my favorite. Sorry.
I met him. That's my nerdy moment when I met Mr. Mouse.
Oh, I love him.
And everyone
so
was
much.
Like, oh, you know, he can be a little eclectic and stuff. I met him. I was here. It was fine. I had a great conversation about everything.
Oh, he's incredibly eclectic. I've spent a lot of time. Like I used to love Tough Guy. I did it a lot and used to run with the Ghost Squad. So run with them at Tough Guy. And yeah, he's fantastic. And we always have him to thank for OCR.
The industry for all of it.
But that picture, holy moly, if you've not seen it, go Google it. It is great.
Yeah, Google Mr. Mouse on the nuclear slide. Not suitable for work.
Oh, good God.
Yes, I will see if I can find a picture of me breaking my nose. Just
or anything you want, but I must see that picture.
it's a good one.
Oh, wonderful. Well, fantastic. Thank you for giving us some insights about the event and...
Absolutely.
I'm so excited about it.
I cannot wait. So yes, and we'll get it done, and I'll see if I can get you some footage or anything for your social media when I eventually get there with Adrian.
Please do just take over the channel and get it shared so we can all see what it looks like.
Yes, absolutely. Amazing. I'm trying to get some footage right now, actually. I'm waiting for them to get back to me just with some actual drone footage, you know, some of their stock footage, so we can kind of showcase what we just talked about. Because until you see it, people won't realize this.
Yeah, once I started Googling it, I was just like, holy moly, this is going to be the highlight of my year.
Oh, it is. It's fantastic. So I guess we should put a race on then.
Yeah, let's do it.
Sounds good.
Amazing. Well, thank you very much. And good luck with all the big events you've got coming up before OCRWC, because they are not insignificant.
One or two to plan, but we're juggling all of them right now.
Amazing. I would not like to have your job.
Well, that's amazing and stressful and fantastic and horrible at the same time.
Like all the best things in life.
It's the best worst job in the world, basically.
The safest, most dangerous race in the world.
People like you. Well, you know, I mean, it's all about just, you know, not to say it's all about meeting people, but just that whole thing of just walking around a festival there is like one of my highlights. Because people will say to me, oh my God, race day must be the most stressful day. I'm like, if I've done my job, race day should not be stressful.
Yeah.
Because race day should be smooth.
Yeah.
So if I'm running around like a headless chicken on race day, I have effed up somewhere.
See, people normally just see me running very fast around and they just laugh at me. But when I'm not running around,
absolutely.
I'm just a giddy child. I'm just so excited. I'm just like, hi, are you having fun? How great is this?
No, it's great. And there's going to be so many faces. There's so many people that I know through the industry who go to OCRWC and come to Spartan races. So I know it's going to be a bunch of them in Mammoth. So I get it's just like a good old, it's like a class reunion sometimes. Yeah.
It's so great that it's kind of come full circle and that you're back with us again and doing this again. And
isn't it?
It's going to be wonderful.
Who'd have thunk it? Who'd have thunk it?
It's a small world, OCR, isn't it?
It really is. It really, really is.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time. This was fun.
I appreciate you taking the time too. Thank you very much.